Welcome to the Just Interesting podcast, the show that's not boring, but it's not also too interesting. It's fine. And joining me, Alex, this week, as always, the person laughing, as you can hear, is Robin.
Hello, Alex. I'm very excited this week because we're joined by a very special guest from one of my all-time favorite YouTube channels, Stu from Debunked.
Hi.
Hey.
How's it going, Stu?
It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you on the podcast for the first time ever.
Very
it's
first
your first
time.
First ever Just Interesting experience.
It's my first ever podcast.
Really?
Oh, then we are especially privileged to have you. See, this is how we get the top guests, the best people in the business. It's by getting them before anyone else.
Yeah.
But shoot, Debunked, many of you actually may have listened to this, may have encountered Debunked on YouTube because it's a channel close to our own hearts, just kind of revealing very, very interesting and thoroughly researched facts about all kinds of topics, really. And you've had a bunch of really impressively viral videos, haven't you, Stu, in the last few years?
Yeah, the odd one's kind of gone pretty big. if anyone's seen it, you'll probably also recognise that Mr. Robin down there is a guest voiceover artist on a lot of them.
So, I was enjoying your most recent video earlier on today on Noah's Ark. And then what do I hear? I hear the beautiful sounds of God.
Yes, indeed. The bellowing, reverberating tones.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was a nice little voice effect you put when I was quoting God.
Yeah, quite nicely.
Yeah, it was great. Well, for the benefits of Stu and for anyone who hasn't seen the podcast already, today we are going to be discussing some things that we learned this week. And then we'll be going through some of your comments of the week. And we will be discussing our main topic of the week. And the question that I wanted to discuss this week with you both is, why are billionaires leaving the planet all of a sudden? What's going on?
They know something we don't.
Exactly. So we're going to be getting into the billionaire space race as our main topic of the week. Mm. And then afterwards, I will be hosting this week's quiz, and it will be Just Interesting versus Debunked for the first time ever. Big showdown.
I do have to put a disclaimer that I'm quite a a meditative thinker. Well, slow to respond.
Luckily it's a buzzer based quiz, so that gives me an edge.
You know, putting together this quiz this week, I fact checked every single quiz answer because as the master of debunking myths and misconceptions, I didn't want to get anything wrong this week.
That's true. I have to debunk my own answers sometimes.
Oh, dear. Cool. Well, let's crack on. Robin, what have you learned this week?
What I learned this week was a little bit of a language fact. So you've heard the phrase carpe diem.
Seize the day.
Seize the day, indeed. Except, and this may be something that Stu already knows, because I'm kind of debunking this one, it isn't seize the day.
Oh, what?
That's a bit of a mistranslation. So before I explain what it actually means, what does seize the day mean to you?
It means, you know, to go out and make the most of every day.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll leave it at that. That's fine.
Take advantage of the opportunity that's handed to you.
Oh, yeah. That's a really good distillation, I think, of what most people, including me, think it means. But actually, it's the phrase was coined, or the one that we quote anyway, is from the Latin poet Horace. But carpe is the second person singular present active imperative, it's an instruction, of the verb carpo, which means to pluck or pick. And actually commonly used in horticulture, gardening. So what he really is saying is pluck the day. And by that, what he's implying is when the moment is ripe, take it. So it's more commonly translated by people who actually speak Latin as he's saying, enjoy the moment.
Oh, okay.
It's like eat a ripe fruit, don't eat a rotten fruit, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. In fact, if anything, it's saying wait until the moment is ripe before you enjoy it.
So don't rush into things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's kind of the opposite of what I think it means, what most people use it as, like carpe diem. Mm. So when you got all these like sports teams with like carpe diem written on their t-shirts and their baseball caps, it's like, well, actually, they're just saying calmly wait and just enjoy life.
Wait for the opportune moment. Oh,
exactly.
Much less of a chant.
Take your time. Take your time.
Yeah. Oh, that's a bit less catchy. Yeah.
What did you learn this week?
I learned some facts about Salvador Dali this week. Salvador Dali, famous artist. Mm-hmm.
Surrealist, right?
Surrealist.
With the moustache.
Yeah. I've been to his house.
That's him.
Really?
Have you?
Yeah,
wow.
In Spain, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Was it oddly constructed? Was it melting?
It was
different. It was quite artistic, but yeah, no, it was. It wasn't like you were walking on another planet and everything was upside down and.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, there was a couple of facts that I learned about him this week, but I couldn't really choose which one, so I'll say both of them. So the first one is he once pranked or tricked, scammed is the better word. Wow. He once scammed Yoko Ono. She offered to pay to buy one of his moustache hairs with his, very famous moustache. And she offered to buy one hair for $10,000. And he thought she was a witch and didn't want to give her any of his hair because he thought she might use it in a spell. So
mix it with toads.
But he wasn't one to pass up on a paycheck, so he sent her a dry blade of grass, and she paid him $10,000 for it.
Nice.
She thought a dry blade of grass was a human hair.
I'm guessing it was brown or something. Yeah, but yeah, I think he
very brittle.
I think he put it in a very nice presentation box. Maybe he sealed it and like vacuum sealed it. I don't know.
So actually, his net profit was only $9,985.
But as a Salvador Dali,
why did he bother?
It's technically a piece of artwork now, so it's probably worth even more.
Actually, yeah.
Yeah, that's very true. The next little fact I had, which this was kind of a little bonus, almost icing on the cake kind of fact, but he designed the Chubba Chups logo.
I knew that.
The lollipop
brand? Really?
That's a Salvador Dali logo that they still use today. Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah. So you've got a little bit of art, piece of art every time you...
That's amazing.
Work. Yeah. He was apparently had no issue doing commercial work. He did ads for Gap and appeared in a commercial for some chocolates or something in 1968. He was happy doing commercial work, and the Chubba Chups is one of his logos. Yeah,
nice.
That's cool.
Contribution to the graphic design world as well as surrealist art.
Quite indeed.
So, Stu, what have you learned this week?
Well, I went down the theme of what we're going to be talking about today and looked into some of the things that that we wouldn't have had the original space race not started and had we not ventured into space, and they range from the more of the mundane things, less mundane, we're using them right now, LEDs, so everything on your telly or your computer screen, all the way up to CAT scans, so life-changing, life-saving pieces of equipment. Yeah, so you've got CAT scans. Either of you wear glasses?
Yeah.
Well, scratch-resistant lenses is because we went to space. That's all came from it. Camera phones, and presumably the cameras that came with this are built on the same kind of thing, so we're using them right now. Foil blankets, water purification systems. So again, another life changer. Dustbusters.
That's surprising.
Yeah. Wireless headphones. So again, another one we're using right now. And what was my other one I was going to throw through? Artificial limbs.
Artificial limbs?
Yeah. NASA's innovations into shock absorbing materials coupled with robotic and extra vehicular activities are being adapted to create more functional and dynamic artificial limbs.
Oh, wow.
Now, that's very cool.
Mm.
That is very cool.
I thought that was just, Neil lost an arm on the moon and they kept it on the hush-hush.
Yeah.
And had to jimmy one together on the way back.
That's great.
That makes more sense.
That's a fantastic list because I love, that's a great demonstration of how all research is valuable eventually. Everything can have a useful application. The one thing that I am questioning though is the scratch resistant lenses. I feel like that's that's just being a diva, really. If you're an astronaut, like, no, my glasses, I need to have scratch resistance.
Well, I think it's actually to do with the windows. So they could see.
Oh, right, the windows are scratch resistant. Okay.
diamond. Oh, it's actually to do with diamond hard coatings for the aerospace systems. It was kind of just, it's been repurposed.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay, that's quite clever then. I take that back.
So all of those technologies came from having to overcome obstacles in getting to space, I guess, like the scratch resistant windows and dust busting in space.
Yeah,
I guess.
I'm not sure where that came from. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a weird one.
Yeah.
The dust buster's probably an admin thing down on Earth where, you know, the government's like, you can't spend all this taxpayers' money and have filthy spacecrafts. And they're like, have you tried to get a Hoover in here? Like, well, make one. Like, fine.
Well, it was actually, this is probably the more interesting one, it was actually used to suck up samples from the moon.
Ah, brilliant.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Different That's type cool. of dust.
I suppose it's difficult to illustrate to someone how important space travel and everything, all the technology that's come of it. People are like, oh, what's the point in going to space?
Mm-hmm.
And it's often difficult to illustrate all the kind of inventions that have happened because of all the space missions, I suppose. So it's good. It's good to know that there are tangible everyday applications for the space missions. Billionaires going into space, though, maybe that's a different story.
Indeed. Yeah, slightly different story, perhaps. Perhaps.
But before we get onto that, shall we talk about some of our favourite comments of the week?
Yeah. I've got a comment which caught me by surprise from Case Closed 93, who on our previous podcast, which was about the leaked documents confirming that, or possibly confirming, that Putin personally approved of a Russian spy plan to get Trump elected. Phew, almost said that in one unbroken sentence. Anyway, the comment's got nothing to do with that, except that Case Closed 93 says that knowing Robin's political views, I'll bet he was dancing on the street with everyone when Thatcher died. Thatcher being the British counterpart to Ronald Reagan. I actually wasn't dancing in the streets. Not that kind of guy. Didn't
just
buy the song.
At home.
Didn't dance at all, really. I saw her not long, a few years before she died. I was in the Imperial War Museum, as you are. And I didn't realize it, but she was there to open a new exhibit or something. And this was when she was in later life, very, very frail. I didn't realize it, but she'd got Alzheimer's, I think, at that point.
Yeah, I was going to say, did she know who she was?
Yeah, and she was, but this is the thing. So she I remember it very vividly because I didn't think I'd ever see Margaret Thatcher in the flesh, but she was wearing her classic hairdo, big hair, but it was either very obviously dyed or a wig. It was just not something an 80-year-old woman would naturally have. Yeah. She was so aged and presumably ill and had put on her makeup very thickly. And all I remember very vividly is that it looked like her face was melting.
Oh,
she just had a really kind of rounded, saggy face. And
like another Salvador Dali.
Yeah. And I actually felt sorry for her. I thought, oh, that's not a dignified way to go.
Yeah.
But her spitting image puppet is now in the Imperial War Museum.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
You sure it wasn't just that you saw?
Maybe that was what I saw.
That was the exhibit that she came to open. Just for her.
That one cabinet with her spitting image puppet in.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting, though. That's cool. I never knew that you met Margaret Thatcher.
Oh, I didn't meet her. I didn't speak to her.
You didn't go and speak to her.
I was within a few feet of her. You know, I was close, but not close enough. She might have died earlier. I'm joking.
I don't know if you are, Robin.
I'm sure
you are. Well, I've got a comment from all that mortified me to my very core. And this is from Kat Hales, who says, I got my first tarantula partly to combat my own arachnophobia. Now I have six tarantulas, Kat. Oh my gosh. I mean, as someone who is perilously scared of spiders, that is horrifying to me.
Also, what a way to start combating your arachnophobia. Didn't you think of starting safe and small? Go big with tarantula.
Just boom.
Yeah.
Was there something that gave you your arachnophobia, Alex? So it's just, it's a, you know, any kind of fear is learnt, really, isn't it? It's like, we're trying to teach our little boy to, you know, just handle as many insects and all those kind of things, so he doesn't ever get scared of those kind of things.
Do you know what? The earliest memory I have of being scared of spiders is when I was really young. I can't remember how old, maybe like around 5 or so. And I left the bathroom and there was a massive spider right on the floor in front of me. So I closed the door and ran back and hid in the bath. And I saw it crawl under the door. And I swear it was coming to try and get me. Never since then, I've never trusted bathrooms.
Spiders never been in the bathroom since.
What's your greatest fear, Stu?
Oh, Christ. Public speaking, weirdly.
Oh. Terrible fear for a YouTuber.
Yeah, that's why I hide away in a little room.
Yeah, it's okay when it's just a lens that you're talking
exactly,
to.
Exactly,
when it's real people.
Yeah, that's an issue.
How about you, Robin? What's your greatest fear?
I don't know. I definitely... Because a phobia is an irrational fear, isn't it? Mm. And I think so, spiders is definitely a thing.
Yeah.
I'm okay with spiders, but when you get the big ones or the ones that move particularly fast, that's when I get a little bit freaked out. And you see them scuttling across the floor. Jumping spiders?
Jumping ones are the worst. Yeah. It's the small, really quick ones that set me off. The tarantulas, I would be terrified of a tarantula, but they're kind of like slow, a bit slower, aren't they? I feel like I could be in the same room as one. But yeah, the little small ones that run across and scuttle about and jump around. No, thank you. On that scary note, shall we move on to an even scarier topic of billionaires escaping planet Earth?
Billionaires in space.
So yeah, the question this week is, why are billionaires leaving the planet? And in the news in the last month or so, there's been a lot of talk about the billionaire space race. And I kind of just wanted to talk about this, what it actually boils down to and what it means. Where's this come from? And what do we think about it? Do we think that this is a good thing that these billionaires are investing in space? Or should this better be left to governments, like has been the historical precedent? So a little bit of background. The phrase has been used a lot in the last month due to two notable billionaires, i.e. Jeff Bezos and Sir Richard Branson, launching themselves into the heavens. On the 11th of July, Sir Richard Branson launched on his Spaceship Two into the upper atmosphere. I think he got to around 86 kilometers high.
Yeah, 53 miles, something like that, yeah.
Reaching what some would consider to be space. However, it doesn't pass the Kármán line, which is kind of internationally recognized where space is at. And that's at 100 kilometers. But I think the American definition is at 80 kilometers. It's all a bit arbitrary, really, though. He still was weightless in space and experienced space the exact same as Jeff Bezos did. And on the 20th of July, so just 9 days later, Jeff Bezos joined him and launched to space on his rocket, New Shepard. Now, both of these events obviously caused a massive stir in the media, but were they really that significant? I'm not so sure, to be honest. These weren't crazy rocket launches. They were just suborbital flights. They were kind of equivalent, I suppose, to, you know, Yuri Gagarin and the very early human spaceflight missions. They just kind of went up, didn't even orbit, and came back down a few minutes later.
Yeah. On one level, it's like, well done, you achieved 1958 level space travel.
Yeah, exactly. But I think the billionaire space race goes a lot further than this. Okay. And it's not just about, you know, billionaires' egos trying to get into space. Or maybe it is, but maybe there is an ego factor in it. But I guess it's them trying to capture two industries, the space tourism sector, and then getting a foothold in the global space industry and government awarded contracts, which is becoming increasingly privatized, I think. So I think that's where the billionaire space race is really heating up, trying to get a bigger slice of the pie of an increasingly privatized industry.
The one thing that is notable about this, I think, is they are the first billionaires to launch themselves into space with their own rockets or spacecraft, right?
That's very true, yeah.
First billionaires in space.
No.
They're the first ones to own the craft that they're using to get into space.
I think billionaires have been up to the ISS before. They've, a couple maybe have launched on Soyuz rockets or even on the space shuttle.
There's that company called Space Adventures that during the noughties, I think the first one was 2001 and they kept going until about 2009. And they were using the Roscosmos, which is the Russian space agency.
Yeah.
They were using their rockets to take them up to the ISS. And I think they were selling them as kind of space hotel package tours. But the ISS doesn't seem like the coziest hotel to stay in. There were a few billionaires who went there. And I think like the tickets were something like $25 million for each ride.
Yeah. It must be so annoying for the astronauts on the ISS when they have to also, like doing all their work as well in space, they have to accommodate for some billionaire that's just paid for a ticket up there. It must be so annoyed.
They're going to be doing that again. So they're going up to the ISS and spending a period of time up there. And they're trying to incorporate it with doing some study type things up there as well to make it seem as though they're doing more astronaut work than just tourism work.
They're actually contributing.
Yeah.
Because
that's part of the big debate as well, isn't it? Whether they are astronauts.
I was going to ask, is that so that they can claim to be astronauts as opposed to space tourists?
Yeah.
I think there was one guy who said, I prefer to be called a private astronaut or something, or a private space traveler, something like that, rather than a space tourist.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like, what are you doing if you're not going up there as a professionally trained scientist?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Like, I would consider myself a tourist, I guess, if I were up there.
Yeah.
It's like if you got a boat, you know, across the Atlantic, back in the early days of, traveling across the Atlantic on ships. If you were manning the rigs and you were steering the ship, then sure, you're a sailor.
Mm.
But if you just you're just on a cruise. You're a tourist.
Yeah.
You can't call yourself a sailor.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that worried me about the whole. It was Jeff Bezos, wasn't it? Or did they both do it, Richard Branson and Jeff Bezos? But as part of the landing ceremony, they presented Bezos with wings or a little medal to say you're an astronaut now.
Yeah, but it's their own version of the wings. Yeah,
It's Blue Origin's own. That's his company. Their own qualification or whatever they call it, award, I guess, for being an astronaut. So he's like, I'm an astronaut. And it's like, yeah, but you made yourself an astronaut. And then it got me thinking, is there an official kind of, there isn't an official qualification, is there?
Well, there is. There's the FAA. So the FAA awards the wings to all the NASA astronauts. And at the moment, they've just changed the qualification, essentially. And I think it happened just before Jeff Bezos and Branson went up there. And the key thing that they've changed in it is that you have to be active. You have to be an active member of the crew rather than just a passive one sitting there having a little float around going, oh, this is nice, isn't it? So you have to actively contribute to the mission, essentially. And I was reading, I've read two conflicting things, one saying that neither of them will qualify for the FAA, the official FAA wings. But another one said that on the itinerary, Richard Branson is listed as an evaluator. So he's actually evaluating the experience. So he's actively contributing to it. So he's likely to get the wings.
What?
Oh, come on.
Everyone's evaluating the experience.
That is just goes to show what you can do when you've got money, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that was a lucky thing because I think they added that in just as they, as an extra thing so he would get his wings, or that was just a lucky thing that they'd added in before they changed the criteria.
Yeah. I wonder if they knew ahead of time that the FAA were going to do that, or if that's just a coincidence, in which case, foresight. Credit to Richard Branson.
On Richard Branson's flight, didn't they have someone doing experiments at the same time? Or is that, I think that might be a future flight. They have some experiments going on.
Yeah, I did read that they had two things going on. One was for NASA, some sort of experiment, and one was for a university. I felt like that was just an extra like tick box just to make it, give it a bit more credit. But
yeah. That must have been a very quick experiment because I think both of these flights only lasted several minutes of weightlessness in space.
Well, I think Jeff Bezos, the Blue Origin was 10 minutes from launch to landing, wasn't it?
Was it that short?
Oh, I thought it was short, 10 minutes, yeah.
Yeah.
what is that?
So I guess why do you think it has taken billionaires so long to reach where NASA and the Soviet Union were 60 years ago? What is it about? Like, why are they only just now doing this? I mean, I suppose actually that's kind of unfair of me to say because I'm painting it as if it's just Richard Branson and Jeff Bezos. But of course, there's a way bigger elephant in the room, which is Elon Musk and SpaceX, which comparatively, you can't deny are way more successful at maybe not the space tourism part of the deal, but definitely getting those private contracts from NASA. And
At this point, SpaceX has contributed more to space exploration and science than any other, any of these other space tourism billionaire owned companies have. I mean, I guess Boeing would be another, they build spacecraft for NASA historically. But I think apart from them, SpaceX is the only one. That's different, is it? That's NASA saying, we want you to build this for us. Whereas SpaceX is like, we're doing our own thing. And then NASA's saying, hey, what you're doing is good. We'll take that. You know, it's like the other way around, which I think is more significant. I'm not saying SpaceX is better than what Boeing does. I'm just saying that, to my mind, SpaceX contributions are slightly more significant. And yeah, that's what surprised me the most. Sorry, Steve, didn't talk over.
No, I just say I'd agree with that because I feel Blue Origins and Virgin Galactic feel very much like just ego trips or joy rides. You know, you're going up to have the thrill and do it. And I'm sure that there is obviously this vision beyond that, but SpaceX has that vision laid out, and you can already see what they're going to do with it.
Yeah. Mm. And this is what surprised me. I hadn't thought about it before, but until the Jeff Bezos and Richard Branson double whammy within the space of a week of each other, pretty much, I suddenly thought, how come Elon Musk hasn't gone into space yet?
Yeah, yeah.
Because in my head, I thought he already had. I'm sure he had, but...
I read that he's booked a ticket with Richard Branson.
He's booked a ticket on Virgin Galactic when he owns SpaceX. What is that about?
Yeah.
Just want to know what the competition's like. I mean,
he wants to evaluate himself.
Yeah, exactly.
I think Elon Musk's always said that he wants more competition in the industry. So I think he's always welcomed competition. Well, he said that publicly. Obviously, privately, he's like, damn it, whenever there's any success in any other company. But that's what SpaceX has been called before, like as a disruptor in the industry. So you mentioned Boeing. They have obviously historically been awarded lots of NASA contracts, including one to design a human space capsule to take them to the ISS. And NASA awarded SpaceX a similar contract for that exact same purpose, so that they would have multiple different options after the retiring of the space shuttle, and so that they didn't have to rely on the Russian rockets. And SpaceX has already ferried, I think, two successful human trips to the ISS. And meanwhile, Boeing's one had a failed launch attempt in 2019. And I think they're going to attempt another one. They might have done it by the time this goes out, actually, but I think it was supposed to be this week. But the point is that SpaceX has kind of come out of nowhere as the new guy and basically bullied their way to the... Well, actually, that's the wrong word. They've just been more successful. And I think now they constitute the vast majority of rocket launches globally. They've had 20 successful launches in 2021 alone, with, I think, around 50 planned.
Wow.
And obviously, we haven't even mentioned the fact that they have this innovative design where they're reusing their rocket boosters, which is massively reduced the cost of launching things into low Earth orbit. And that's pretty huge. Also, I think it's worth mentioning just how well-rounded their media department is, and their like live streaming and everything. They've been very successful at capturing the public's imagination. I would say anyway.
Yeah, I would agree. Particularly, they caused quite a stir with their, when they unveiled the design of their spacesuits for the was it the Dragon capsule?
Yeah.
It was all very sci-fi looking, and definitely did not look like a real spacesuit. Looked like a Hollywood thing. But that's, I guess, that for me that was the real
the name SpaceX as well does, doesn't it?
it's all very Hollywood, isn't it? And that was the moment for me when those spacesuits were unveiled, where I realized, oh gosh, this is what happens when private enterprise gets involved in space travel, because it's no longer about the mere function of the things. It's about image.
Exactly.
And that's kind of cool. You know, that's good, because that is the I think the undeniable benefit of competition in the private sector, which is that they do try to make the nicest experience possible. So we are now entering an age probably where not only is private space travel, space tourism, going to be possible, but you'll probably get a much comfier ride than you probably would if you were a NASA astronaut. I don't know how I feel about it.
It's a tough one, isn't it? Because I think historically with these kind of things, travel and exploration is at first led by pioneers, and like countries will send out settlers and, you know, explorers on behalf of governments. And then it's later on that private enterprise starts. Whereas in the space industry, the government contracts is, I don't know, it seems to be like the private enterprise is almost taking over entirely from what the government's doing. Do you think that's what's happening? Or everything still seems to be led by NASA, but they are just reaching out to private companies a lot more. But as we're recording this, SpaceX is currently assembling the largest rocket ever built. I think it's bigger than the Saturn V rocket that took men to the moon in 1969.
Why is it so big?
The super, super heavy rocket is currently being stacked on their star base in Texas. And this is going to be the first ever fully reusable rocket. So the booster comes down and lands, the Starship, the second stage, the upper stage, also lands vertically. Whoa. And that it's designed to be fully reusable, so they can just be stacked again and launched again within an hour, I think.
Wow.
Amazing.
And this is going on currently. So I guess it's kind of a weird one, because Elon Musk has said that he wants to make life multiplanetary, which is not just a normal business decision, is it? That's not like a... What's the business
angle there?
That's
an Elon Musk decision, isn't it?
And normally that kind of decision that, you know, is taken by governments as opposed to private enterprise.
It's taken by some governments. I think that's the thing. And even then, usually it's taken with some other motivation, an agenda in mind. Like Stu mentioned the space race at the beginning of the video when he's listing things that we wouldn't have without it. And the space race, as the name suggests, is entirely motivated by the sense of we've got to beat the other guys. In this case, it was America and Russia wanting to beat each other. And yeah, government did all that. It wouldn't have happened, and all the technology wouldn't have developed, and, you know, mankind's breaking the final frontiers or whatever wouldn't have happened without the government doing it. Private enterprise would never have done that. But it only happened for this very negative motivation of we need to be the first in space because the other guys might get it and then drop nukes on us.
Yes, of course, yeah.
And I think, and as soon as that motivation disappeared, the Cold War was over. Even under the Democrats, who are much more inclined to spend big in America, NASA's budget got cut. Then under the Republicans with George Bush, NASA's budget got really cut. And that's when they really started looking towards private enterprise, particularly SpaceX. And then I think even under Obama, he protected the budget rather than increasing it, I think. So NASA's budget for doing its own R&D has definitely shrunk. And they focused more on designing the robots that will But all the time, you know, since the space race, NASA has designed it, but then farmed out the construction to private business, and that was the big selling point. Kennedy made that big selling point, which is why he managed to get Republicans to vote for it back in the 60s. It wasn't just that we're going to beat the Russians; it was, and we're going to spend billions in private enterprise and boost the economy. And the Republicans couldn't really argue against that. So I guess it was Noam Chomsky, I think, who made the point that outside the space race, all the major technological revolutions of the latter half of the 20th century were, most of them in America, started at MIT. MIT, funded by the government, professors and very smart people, mathematicians and engineers, lecturing and designing technology for the military. And then the military eventually, once they've got that technology and they're using it, the patents eventually get passed into the private sector. So Noam Chomsky made the point that anyone who celebrates the innovation of the private sector and who is really obsessed with this idea that government is bad and government is regressive and oppressive, they're actually wrong, because all the major developments of the 20th century, at least, if not before then, can be traced to government funding and taxpayers' money being spent on it. And it's eventually it all just goes to the private sector. And I'm getting a bit political now, but I don't know where you guys stand on the whole. Is it a good idea to use taxpayers' money to invent new technology to then just let for free, let private enterprise have that for free to then make profit from it? I don't know where I stand on that, because as you said, Alex, there's this NASA claim that it's cheaper for them to hire SpaceX to do their work for them. But part of me thinks, is it?
I mean, yeah, I don't know why, but like NASA's been working on their own launch rocket, this SLS, for years now. And I think that's been massively over budget, delayed. I'm not sure why that is taking them so long. And I think it's just kind of repurposing some boosters as well from the shuttle era. And you compare that to the work going on in private companies, and like, why is progress in the government program, NASA, so sluggish compared with something like SpaceX, which is moving at insane speeds?
Well, I guess it's kind of, you've got SpaceX, or the whole of anything to do with Elon Musk or anything to do with Amazon, everything's made for profit, isn't it? Whereas a government isn't. So it's just there to work with the budgets they've got, or work with the debts that they've got, and go forward with that. But with the point that Robin made, was that, is it worth the taxpayers paying towards it? And if you look at the whole cycle, like some of those inventions that I listed off, like the CAT scan, you know, those things go full circle in the end.
As in the taxpayer benefits from the technology.
Exactly, yeah. So everything goes, so those kind of benefits, yeah, it may just include silly things like wireless headphones and everything like that, but there's a lot of medical inventions and advantages that we see in the end.
Yeah, and in theory, you just reminded me as well, the argument is, and it's probably true, that once things have been mass-produced, they're more affordable.
So,
I mean, wireless headphones 20 years ago, I imagine, would have cost a lot of money. And now, if you're spending a lot of money on your wireless headphones, it's out of choice, right? You're choosing to get, like, premium wireless headphones, but you could get them for as cheap as £20, £10 even over here. So my next question is, I guess, with space travel, right? So Space Adventures announced back in 2007, I think? But they're still developing it. They want to have the first flyby of the moon.
Right, okay.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. Although SpaceX have now announced that as well, I think.
Yeah. Because there's like a Chinese billionaire that's paid to go on it already, isn't there?
Yes. Yeah. And he's opened a competition to the public, hasn't he, to come and join him, I think.
He wants some artists to come with him to be inspired by seeing the moon up close. And then when they get back, to make art based around that, I think, is the idea.
And that's SpaceX is going to do that in 2023 with Yusaku Maezawa, I think is his name. So Japanese, I guess.
Sorry.
I'm assuming from the name. Yeah, so they're going to do that in 2023, which I guess means they're going to beat Space Adventures. But anyway, Space Adventures announced it, and they said the price per ticket would be $100 million.
Wow.
And there's only four that can go on it, right?
Yeah. Because I can't remember which craft they're using, but I think it's one that NASA has used, so it's quite small. Do we think it's going to get affordable anytime soon?
No, not soon.
No, not soon.
Well, but then there's different points to it, isn't it? Like there's SpaceX's flight to be able to get to anywhere in the world in under an hour. So those developments of space travel, they may lead to space flights in terms of going suborbital or those kind of things. Maybe at some point in our lifetime, but I can't imagine any of us flying around the moon. You know, I can't imagine that being an affordable ticket.
Because even Virgin Galactic tickets at the moment, I think, are $250,000,
yeah.
Just to have a, 15-minute weightless flight?
But they've also said that the next ones will cost more, I think.
Oh.
So instead of it going down, it'll actually go up to start with.
Of course it will.
Cost more to run than I think they'll...
Yeah.
I think they've already sold quite a lot of tickets, though, haven't they? So maybe it's a waitlist to get on the list.
Yeah.
But then... Okay, so this devil's advocate. This is the preserve of the rich, and it's actually a secret cabal plot for, under the guise of legitimate private enterprise, rich people are just going to leave the planet and let everyone else die from climate change.
I mean, the thing is, where are they going to go? There's...
Well, Mars. Mars is Elon Musk's plan, isn't it?
Unless like an asteroid is coming that is going to wipe out all humans that only the rich know about. I think even under the worst case scenario of climate change, Earth is still going to be way more habitable than Mars. So I don't know.
I feel like, you know, in a really pessimistic view is when you kind of get to that level of Elon Musk, where you can do absolutely anything you want with the money that you've got. You always want to try something new and do something new. What's the next thing? And it's almost like, I'm done with this planet. Let's move on to the next one. You know, let's go. Let's go do that one now. So that is his. That's how it works for him.
Yeah.
I've surfed in every ocean. I want to surf on Mars.
Exactly.
In the sea of tranquility. Yeah. I mean, he must have some kind of, God complex. His ambition is to make life multi-planetary.
That's Jeff Bezos' thing as well, though, isn't it? I think he said multi-planetary as well.
He's just a copycat.
He seems like he's definitely behind Elon Musk in terms of achieving that goal.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that carries on, though, because Jeff Bezos is not someone who's just like Richard Branson, who's interested solely in the tourist sector of space. He's also designing a new rocket called New Glenn, which should be competitive, I think, with SpaceX's Falcon 9 rocket. And he was also in the running for a recent NASA contract to design their human landing system, which was part of their Artemis program.
Oh yeah, he was.
And this is quite an interesting story, and actually kind of feeds back into that NASA's budget discussion that we were having not too long ago, because NASA originally planned to award two companies a contract to design like a lunar lander, and in the end they only chose one, and they chose SpaceX's because SpaceX's was way cheaper and more went like beyond what they'd asked originally of the proposal. And but the reason why they could only choose SpaceX's, to be honest, was because it was the only one they could afford. They didn't have enough of a budget in the end, what they were promised, to award two companies. And this prompted, I think, Jeff Bezos to complain to Congress. And it kind of caused it, because he said it was unfairly awarded And if he knew that budget was a problem, they would have adjusted the budget. And now he's gone back to them and offered to waive $2 billion of the fee.
We didn't just need so that he bit. Could,
just so he, oh, exactly, yeah. Just so he can stay in the running. So I think he's also quite ambitious in the billionaire space race as well. But yeah, he seems to be, he's got a lot of catching up to do.
Mm. But he is currently the richest man in the world, isn't he?
I mean, he is, yeah.
By quite a way.
Very much profited from the pandemic.
yeah, that's true.
I mean, I guess that kind of... Do you think that the money that these billionaires are spending on space is worthwhile? Do you think it's ultimately, if you were in their shoes, would you be doing this or would you spend that money elsewhere?
I personally wouldn't know. my big beef with it is we kind of... It's in terms of emissions and all those kind of things, I guess. Like when the Falcon takes off, it's something like, I've got it written down here, it's like 300 tons of CO2.
Wow.
Yeah.
336 tons for the Falcon X when it takes off of CO2. And I know that's only like one every now and then at the moment is the plan, but if they're trying to make it, I know Branson was saying that it's space travel for everyone, but the emissions are going to be bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
And we haven't even sorted out international travel, to make clean international travel on this planet yet. there's talk that there's going to be, there are electric planes that have done flights at the moment, but I think they're very limited to how far they can go. It kind of feels like we need to concentrate on getting these bits sorted on this planet before we start going off up there and doing that. But also,
I mean, we've already started polluting Mars, just sending rovers and stuff there.
Yeah.
I mean, these are the same criticisms made of the space program back during the space race when it seemed important to beat the Russians. People were saying you could spend those billions of dollars on dealing with homelessness in America, and it's hard to argue with that kind of emotive argument when you're saying there are poor people starving on the streets and you're spending billions of dollars going into space for what discernible purpose. Particularly with the climate change thing, we're the acceleration of the space race. I don't know. Stu, do you know if there's been a study where someone's actually said, if the space, if the new space race between the billionaires accelerates at the rate that it currently is, it's going to outweigh all the benefits of the Paris Accords and whatever that governments are agreeing.
There is.
Someone's made that study.
Let me just have a quick look.
I know that, I think I read
it was
that...
a calculation. I was trying to find it.
Oh, really?
You carry on. Yeah, you carry on. I'll see if I can...
Well, I think I read somewhere that the average annual emissions of like space travel are going up by like 5 or 6% every single year. So it is accelerating. And yeah, I mean, that could accelerate rapidly if space tourism really does take off.
Because just on the more general climate change.
I was just going to say the thing that I did note down was that although SpaceX is looking like the winner of the space race at the moment. Bezos's fuel that he uses is way greener. The emissions from that are primarily water vapor. I mean that it's not clean because it's let me just find it's a mix of liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen. And so you get water vapor and a few other combustion products that come out, but there's no CO2. But that can still have an effect on the ozone and things like that when those are put out in the upper atmosphere. The actual fuels that they get still cause emissions and all those kind of things to actually make the fuels. But far, far superior to either Branson's or Elon Musk's fuel products that they're using at the moment.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
If Musk moves in that direction, then that would be great because then you could look at how you'd apply that to, air travel and all those kind of things, and then that would be great. But when he's using something that's sticking out 330 tons of CO2 each time, it's like you're going backwards to go forwards.
Yeah, I mean it's funny as well, particularly ironic coming from the man behind Tesla.
Exactly, yeah.
That's very true, yeah.
I mean, I kind of understand you can't do a battery-operated rocket to Mars, but...
No.
Not yet, anyway.
How about a giant bottle of Coke and put some Mentos in it and just see what happens? There you go.
I'll do it.
Robin has cracked the space industry.
You can make your own space rocket. Just buy 200 gallons of Coke.
Coca-Cola and Mentos has partnered up to create a new private enterprise. Yeah.
But it's funny you raise that point, because one of the things that's less impressive about Virgin Galactic and what Richard Branson does is that Spaceship 2, isn't it? It's called Spaceship 2 because he's actually using the design of Spaceship 1, which was designed by a guy from Microsoft.
Yeah.
Or rather funded by a fellow from Microsoft who then created it to be going to low orbit and then basically made the design free for anyone else to build upon. And Richard Branson snapped it up and is just using
the... I didn't realize it was released for free, okay.
Yeah, well, not anymore. I think he bought the patent or something.
Okay.
Or maybe at least he's... Spaceship 2, he owns the patent on, based on Spaceship 1, I think. Okay. So even the whole thing about Virgin Galactic is kind of classic Richard Branson, where he's taken someone else's design for the spacecraft itself and he's using basically the same technology that NASA has used for the last four decades for the rockets, and is just slapping the Virgin logo all over it and claiming it's something brand new. I mean, they have done a lot of research and development. I mean, he announced it a decade ago, didn't he? At least, maybe longer.
I think, yeah, I think it's been in development for 17 years or so.
There you go. And but I think a lot of that is like the experience side of things rather than the actual technology.
I think they did a successful test definitely over a decade ago. So I think you're right. But they also had a pretty huge setback, didn't they, in 2014? They had one of the test flights had a fatal crash that killed one of the pilots. And I think that set them back quite a way. Are we saying if we're billionaires, we wouldn't be investing as much in this? What would be a worthwhile endeavor? I think climate change is a big one. If you're Jeff Bezos, how have you not? I don't know. Yeah, I feel like you would want to just fix the planet from climate change, invest in that kind of stuff.
I think Amazon was quite slow on the uptake of all that anyway, wasn't it? I think it was quite behind declaring it'd have, net zero emissions and all those kind of things. I think probably because he was starting to think about the next planet now.
He could grow an Amazon 2.0, Amazon Rainforest 2.0, if he wanted to.
He could, actually.
This is what I was thinking, because, if it makes sense, you could own the Amazon and be called Amazon. And then
Save the Amazon.
I actually looked into how much it would cost to buy the Amazon. They can't afford it. If they all club together, they might be able to.
To circle back to your question, Alex, about what would we do what would I do if I were a billionaire and had that much money? I honestly goes back to the question that you said, what can you do with the money you've got? How much money do you need before you can actually achieve meaningful change? I don't know, because Jeff Bezos is rich enough to buy several countries, but could he actually achieve anything by doing that? Because what we need to do is sustainable, long-term systemic change across the world, right? We need to have effective distribution of wealth and resources, particularly food and water and shelter, and we need to bring about world peace, right? And there's some people listening to us might know about this person. They might be annoyed by this person. I don't know, but he's been doing the rounds a lot in the last couple of years. This American journalist called, I think, is Anand Giridharadas, who has published a couple of books on questioning the value of private philanthropy. And in particular, saying that basically very rich people do a lot of public good with charities to make themselves look and feel better. And some of them it's done with genuine, heartfelt intent. I think he says the Gates Foundation is an example of somebody who really wants to achieve something and has done in terms of malaria in particular. And then with others, it's just a smokescreen to hide the fact that they're doing great damage in perpetuating the inequality of society, which is the root cause of most of society's ills. It's inequality. He's not saying these billionaires are responsible for starting it. He's just saying they're responsible for not changing the situation. And so there's also this longstanding, almost an established fact, I guess, statistically, that the most efficient method of funding for anything is taxation. It's the most effective way to fund anything because it's the same principle of, for example, Debunked, your most popular video is what, 20 million views, 21 million views, I think?
Something like that. Yeah. The penny of the Empire State Building, yeah.
Yeah, so if everybody who watched that video gave you a dollar, Stu, you could retire. Yes. You could retire for the rest of your life.
I'd be doing this from a swimming pool in the Bahamas.
Exactly. But that's not the way it works. Obviously, that's why you don't have a dollar for every view. But if everyone who watched that video did give you a dollar, it would only cost them a dollar, but you would have $21 million. Mm. And that's why taxation is so effective, because every person pays a penny. And collectively, a nation of 350 million people suddenly gives a ton of money to solve any problem, which is why taxation is more than a penny in the dollar, because you need a little bit more money to tackle a lot of problems. So actually, a lot of private... If I were a billionaire, I would constantly doubt whether I could actually meaningfully affect any positive change with the money I've got. And I would probably want to give it as much as possible to the government and say, you can do the most good with the money I give you. I could give $20 billion to a charity and they could tackle cancer for the next couple of years, or I could give you $20 billion and you could spread it across all of the problems and help a lot of people with a whole variety of things and probably make life better for the nation as a whole rather than a subset of people suffering from a particular problem that I happen to have paid attention to.
That depends who's in power at the time.
I was going
that's
to say,
true. That's
so you
true.
would arrange a meeting with Boris Johnson and you would hand him all your billions and trust him to do the right thing with it.
Yeah, he knows what to do. Yeah. Yeah, that's the problem. And that's why government is wisely mistrusted, because you never know who's going to be in power tomorrow and what they're going to do with your money. So it's a catch-22, isn't it?
Well, one final question.
Sorry.
Far too political there, Robin.
One final question for you both then. Would you go to space? If you were a billionaire and you had your own space company, would you go up into space? Or if you weren't a billionaire, which billionaire's company would you want to fly on?
The answer is yes, absolutely. And I can't resist the allure of the Blue Origin penis rocket. It's just too tempting.
Why is it shaped so much like a penis?
I don't know.
Have you seen the inside of it yet?
Yeah.
Blue Origin's looks quite comfy.
Some of the shots of the interior.
Yeah. I haven't looked inside. Is it blue? Is there
blue? It's a pot. Yeah. So it's all in a round. Yeah. I think you can all just then you start floating around in a nice circle.
Oh, so are they strapped to the outside then?
Outside or inside? I can't remember. I only saw the footage of them floating around in it. But whereas Branson's feels very much like you're in a tube and I can imagine them all crashing into each other quite a lot.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen the inside of your blue penis, as you call it. But I'll just go, I probably wouldn't. I've just never had that much appeal to do it. It's never, I was never a child going, I want to be an astronaut, It's never one of those things. I wanted to be a stuntman when I was a little boy. Like you say, there's just more you could do with it, with that money.
That's true.
But, yeah, I'd probably, if I was to go with one of them, I'd probably go with, SpaceX is the only option at the moment to go out of orbit. But I would go with Blue Origins over Virgin Galactic.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And also you cross the Kármán line, if you go with Blue Origin. So there's no little niggly bit in the back of your head that's like, did I go to space? You did go to space.
It's not like if you're in America you went to space, but the rest of the world, no, you didn't go to space.
I think I'd like to go to space, but I wouldn't. I'm not too bothered about the whole just going up and then come back down. That's almost like a big fairground ride. I'd quite like to just. I'd visit the ISS or do something like that. But, so, yeah, I'm not really bothered by either of them.
And not even moon flyby. I would like to go on the moon. You know, that would be cool. Mars would be nice, but I think the journey would be too long for me to really want to.
You'd get bored by then. You'd get over it very quickly.
Yeah, probably, yeah. And today we're in space. Wow, that was nice. And at the end of this 6-month journey, red sand, as far as the eye can see. Well, thank you.
They don't even have a McDonald's there. What is the point?
Oh, that'll happen soon after.
Yeah, definitely. Right. Well, are you both ready for the showdown of the century in this week's quiz?
I imagine Robin's going to wipe the floor with me.
Well, welcome, gentlemen, to this week's quiz. For your benefit, Stu, because you might not know, there are 10 questions in the quiz, plus a bonus question if we need it. And the topic is general knowledge. So should be pretty good. It should be fine. There might be some questions in there that hopefully you'll both know.
There might be some that we both know. That's
hopefully.
Might
fill
some,
us with confidence.
It's a draw of 1-1-1-0.
It's just a typical quiz, basically. I'm trying to think, what are the rules that we've established over the last few years, Robin?
Not really. First one to buzz like gets to answer.
Quiz.
But if they get it wrong, the other person gets a chance. That's normally right? Yeah.
And if you struggle to get an answer, I'll think up a clue or something.
Yeah. Yeah, we can ask for clues. Yeah.
But in the meantime, let's hear your buzzers. Robin, what have you gone for?
Well, in keeping with our theme of outer space, I have former Doctor Who actor Tom Baker saying...
Curry sauce all over your anus. Delicious.
Excellent. Amazing.
There you go. Thank you.
I'm afraid I've gone much more straightforward, but it's got a sci-fi sound, but anyone from the UK may know this from Catchphrase.
Nice.
That's a great
sound. Catchphrase buzzer. And Catchphrase has just copyright claimed our video. I'm sure they'll let that one slide. Okay, cool. Question number one. Until 1923, what was the Turkish city of Istanbul called?
Curry sauce all over your anus.
I believe that was Robin.
It's not Istanbul, it's Constantinople?
It's not Istanbul, it's Constantinople. Yes, that's correct. 1-0, Robin. Yeah, it was called Constantinople for years. That's not a fact.
I'm guessing,
I don't know how long it was called that for.
Over a millennium, right? Because it's after an emperor, Constantine, I think.
Okay, question number two. 1-0 to Robin. This is a closest wins answer. Don't expect you to get this date.
No.
When was the London Underground first opened?
Ooh. Oh.
I think it was... This is private, true. when it was still the private, I'm assuming, rather than when it was government. So I'd say 1890.
Okay. 1890. Okay. So it's closest wins. So if Robin, you want to have a guess as well?
See, I know Stu's in the right era because it's definitely Victorian, but I don't know if it's earlier or I'm going to go 1850, optimistic.
I think Robin is closer, sadly. It was opened in January 1863. And I think it was the...
Sorry, Steve.
It was what then became the Metropolitan Hammersmith and City line was the first one in operation. But you are right to an extent, those two, because there was something that did open, I think, in 1893. Maybe that's
I know it was all privately owned. Well, this was kind of like a hearsay fact, but it was all privately owned at the start, and that's why you've got them all at different levels.
Yeah.
So it wasn't regulated.
Yeah,
or some that go really deep down and some all over. Yeah, they're all kind of, none of them really match up.
You are right in that the London Underground was officially founded in 1890, but the actual underground was opened in 1863.
I don't know. That's if he got the date bang on for the London Underground. I think that's worthy of a point. That's definitely worth the point.
Because it's it was opened,
not founded. It's kind of it's weird though. The founding of it was after when it was first opened, which doesn't make any sense.
the organization.
That's what I mean. I think it was probably something else until it became unified as one. So they were all private networks before.
You're right. I think it was just the Metropolitan Underground before that. Right. So yeah, I'm going to give you both a point for that because I'm a generous.
That's very generous. Are you sure? Well, I mean, Stu definitely deserves a point.
Well, looking at it, maybe it's a bit misleading because it is London Underground, which is the name of the organization. So yeah, I'll give you both a point for that. Because you did very well to get the actual founding date spot on.
That was amazing.
That was something that's buried away at the back.
Okay, something a bit different now. Question number 3-1 to Robin. What is the all-time most streamed song on Spotify to date?
Oh.
Curry sauce all over your anus.
That's a great buzzer. I haven't heard that one before.
Thank you. It's going to be... Because Taylor Swift isn't on Spotify, is she? She Didn't she pull it all off?
Probably. Jay-Z did. I know, he started a trend, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think... So I think I feel like some of the obvious choices...
Here.
Hey, thank you. Some of the obvious choices don't actually have their music on Spotify. I bet it's someone really uninspiring, like Justin Bieber. I'm going to say it's Baby Baby by Bieber.
It is not Baby Baby by Bieber.
Oh.
No, Christ, I don't know any of his songs.
There was some... I'm not going to give you anyone a clue. Not yet. Your logic is kind of found though, Robin. That's
okay. Is that kind of modern era pop personality?
Oh, is it? I don't know any of her songs. Ariana Grande.
It's not Ariana Grande.
It's not Ariana Grande.
Okay.
What would be a good clue for this one? So the name of this song by this artist. Shares it's very similar sounding to the 2017 Best Picture film.
Whoa, 2017
by Guillermo del Toro.
Oh,
I think it won Best Picture.
Oh.
So it sounds very similar to that.
Sounds very similar to
curry sauce. So that was a really good clue. I feel like a bit too good. The film you're referring to, I believe, is The Shape of Water.
That's
right. Yeah.
The film.
Yeah, yeah. And didn't Ed Sheeran have a song called The Shape of You?
Nailed it. That's it.
Of course. Yeah.
Couldn't have done it without the clue, though. I would never have got that without the clue.
I was happy with that clue. Yeah, I'm glad that worked out. That could have horribly backfired. Well done, Robin. Yeah, well deduced. So that is 3-1 to Robin as we go on to question 4. Where was the first modern Olympic Games held?
Well, modern. I assume it was in. Was it Athens? Or is that not considered modern?
It was in Athens, yeah.
Okay.
It was 1896 was the first modern Olympic Games held in Athens. Okay. I was thinking maybe that would be a bit of a, like, you might think that was going to be a trick question, but it wasn't. Cool. So that is 3-2 now.
Ooh-hoo-hoo.
Plenty of time to come back. Still very level as we move on to question 5.
Oh-ho-ho-ho.
When was Netflix founded?
Oh,
this can be a closest wins as well, actually.
Okay.
Curry sauce all over your anus.
Yes.
It's definitely noughties, right? Because they started out doing DVDs. Like Blu-ray was late noughties, wasn't it? 2007.
Okay.
Are we talking about Netflix or Love Film?
Oh.
I'm talking about. Netflix.
Okay. Yes, that's a good point.
I would say 2013, 14? 2013.
I'm just looking this up now. So the answer I had may have been Love Film, I guess. But it said Netflix. But the answer I had was 1997.
Oh, wow. No. So that would have been, when it was Love Film.
So
unless it wasn't Love Film.
So why did it become Netflix?
I don't know. This is just like, it says it's Netflix, not Love Film.
Really?
When it was founded. Founded 29th of August 1997 in Scotts Valley, California.
Oh, wow.
Was it called Love Film over here or something?
It was, yeah.
Maybe not in the US? I'm not sure.
That's a funny thing.
So I thought it changed its name when it went online.
I never realized that they were the same. I thought maybe they were different companies. Interesting. Well, I'm going to have to give it to Robin.
I mean, I didn't deserve that. But I genuinely had no idea it was that old.
It was surprisingly old. They did start out with DVDs and that kind of model.
Yeah. But I was thinking of Love Film. I didn't realize it was,
Well, there you go. That is 4-2 to Robin as we move on to question number 6. Which philosopher coined the phrase, I think, therefore I am?
Curry sauce all over your anus. Delish.
Sorry, Steve, were you about to say something?
No. I was going to say, this will be Robin's one straight away.
All right. the watch says I get it wrong. I believe that was the French philosopher René Descartes.
That is correct, yes.
Yeah.
Well done.
Nicely done, well done.
Je pense. Donc, je suis. I can't. I don't.
I think that was the hardest question I think I had in this quiz, and you just got it straight away. So well done, Robin. I wouldn't have been able to get that one either.
Thanks for asking it.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so that is, what's that now? 5-2, I believe.
Believe so.
But you can still
by fluke. You've got this. You can still
call something back.
There's still time to win this. Yeah.
There's 4 questions, right? So you can come back. Yeah.
Okay. Question number 7. Which small fish is named after a European island?
Huh.
Which small fish is named after a European island?
Is it a famous fish?
It's a pretty famous fish. You would have heard of it. And you would have heard of the island as well.
Guppy?
It's not guppy. No.
Well, that might be a small island off of somewhere.
I was going to say, what's the island?
Is that fish then called guppy?
Yeah.
I don't know. Because Jersey is the name of a cow and a type of clothing. Is it also the name of a fish? The Jersey fish? Is that a thing?
It's not Jersey fish. It's a notable fish. It's it's not some random one with just like a word shoved before it, like the Jersey fish.
Right, okay.
It's a heavy hitter. It's up there with cod and haddock,
I was gonna say, is it cod? I don't know. The Isle of Cod.
You can rule those ones off now. So I gave you a clue. The island is a pretty big one close to Italy. The island that the fish is named after.
Oh no, but this is I don't know this fish. Capri is what I was gonna say, but I don't know the fish called Capri. Or it's Naples. Not...
It's not Capri.
I mean, I feel if I get this right, then I really don't deserve it because I've never heard of this fish. But
it's not going to be the one then.
Sicily?
It's not Sicily.
Okay. So I
give you the what the island is. And then
Is that the same name as the fish?
Well, it's a similar name. It'll be fingers on buzzers.
Okay.
It was named after it. Okay, shall I give you the island? Sardinia.
Oh. Sardine. is Sardinia sardine in Italian, I assume? Is that the English translation?
Yeah.
I would assume so. Because I don't know, but yeah, I would assume that.
That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
It's obvious when you think about it.
Sardina is the Italian for sardines. So very similar. Yeah.
Yeah. Sardinia, the place of sardines.
Yeah. Very good. So that is, what's that, 5-3 now as we go on to question number 8. Now, the next few questions, I wanted to do a little bit of a theme for them. I don't know, you might say separate the truth from the myths, the facts from the misconceptions. I don't know where I got that from, but...
Nice.
Maybe I should copyright that or something else.
And charge Stu every time he says it. Yeah.
Just click on the link below.
So basically, for the next few questions, I'm going to say a statement and you're going to tell me if that is a fact or a misconception.
That's a good
statement that you would assume, or you've probably heard before, and whether it's true or false.
Okay.
Question number 8. Napoleon Bonaparte was shorter than the average person.
It's false.
It is false, yes. Napoleon was actually slightly taller than the average Frenchman of his time. People back there were obviously shorter than they are today. Yeah. And his height was recorded as 5'2" in French feet. So that sounds very short, but it's actually 5'7" in American feet. And some people believe that he was nicknamed Le Petit Caporal, the little corporal, as a term of affection, not because of his stature.
That's interesting. Because when you just said 5'2", I was like, Frenchmen were only 5'1". Yeah. Like, what's going on? But French inches were different to English inches.
Yeah. Right. So there you go.
I mean, that's easy propaganda for the English, isn't it?
Indeed, yeah.
He's only 5'2", and he doesn't deny it.
Okay. Question number 9. And that is 5-4 now to Stu. So you're coming back.
He's catching up.
Oh, no, 5-4 to Robin, sorry.
Yeah. Just take your points while I'm at it.
Just swap over, yeah.
Okay, question number 9. Lobsters are immortal.
Oh.
Oh, no.
The phone went to sleep.
Oh no, sorry Stu.
No, go for it.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. True?
It is true, relatively true, yeah. Lobsters don't seem to show signs of aging. The oldest known lobster was estimated to be 140 years old, and whilst most animals stop growing once they reach maturity, lobsters can continue to grow with age and can even regrow lost limbs. Could be due to a special enzyme called telomerase. There are some other plants and animals that defy aging as well, including the bristlecone pine tree and some certain species of jellyfish. So,
why the immortal jellyfish?
How come science hasn't used this yet to cure aging?
Surely they are. Well, they're doing lots of things to try and cure things. Like, I think I covered the okay, that's quite a bland statement, isn't it? But they're using lots of these immortal and regenerative animals to try and work out how they can do it in humans. I think I covered the worm.
Yeah.
That you can cut up into lots of different pieces and it regenerates into lots of its own versions. And that's kind of becoming a big point of study at the moment to see how they can use that.
Oh, this is like
make multiple versions of you. Yeah,
it's like, I finally solved it. We can now apply this enzyme to humans. Unfortunately, if we cut off your limbs, you'll grow another. Yeah. Lots of little yous running around. Yeah. Very popular with chefs.
Yes.
Always growing their fingers back.
Yeah, I think I remember reading somewhere that there's like a private pharmaceutical company that produces this enzyme. I think it's producing this one, telomerase. And I think I remember reading that someone high up in the company has just been injecting it into herself for like the last decade or so.
just to see how it goes.
Just to see what happens. So who knows? Maybe she'll be immortal from now on.
Yeah, her claws are coming along nicely.
Well, I think that now makes it 6-4 to Robin, which sadly I think means that Robin has won the quiz. But there's still a chance to get the last question right.
It can be close.
It can be even closer.
It's very close, yeah.
Okay, question number 10. Chameleons change color to match their surroundings.
Oh, this is a false or false?
Yeah.
Sorry. False.
It is false, yes. Contrary to...
Yeah, there you go.
I was just, going to say, contrary to popular belief, chameleons don't change the color to blend in with their surroundings. Their natural camouflage serves several purposes. The main one is to alert neighbors of danger, apparently.
Oh. What? Wait.
I thought it was something to do with their emotions. Like, so if they were scared, they kind of bend around one. So yeah, if they get scared or they change the color, and then if they're trying to entice another chameleon, then they go a different color and all those kind of stuff.
But they do camouflage themselves to match their surroundings, though, don't they?
No.
That's a thing, right?
No.
I don't believe so. No. I think
that's a misconception, Robin. That's a myth.
So they don't like look like the tree that they're sitting on or anything like that. That's not a thing.
I think they have several colors that they can alternate between, but I don't think they do that as a way of blending in.
A limited number of colors.
I think so, yeah.
I thought they were like
an LED screen. You can just tap it in and change it.
RGB lighting.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Because for a moment, I genuinely thought they were like octopuses where, they turn into their surroundings. I thought
or become almost like translucent to do it, yeah.
So when you said, Alex, that they do it to warn their friends of danger, my head immediately went like, they've got a group of chameleons eating lunch and like, oh, Bob's disappeared. Quick, Scarpa. Huh?
Congratulations, Robin, and commiserations, Stu. Very good effort all round, though.
It was all in the buzzers. Five.
Yeah, I think there was one buzzer where you got... It wasn't quite playing, but I think that could have gone the other way.
That's
very
true.
Easily.
Yeah, Stu's buzzer didn't work, and I got
it
in.
That's very generous of you.
No, we were very well matched. You
scraped
well done,
a few
sir.
Together there.
well done, sir.
Well, would you like the bonus question to kind of? I don't know. I mean, it was Robin won the quiz, but you could get the moral victory if you get the bonus question.
Absolutely
right.
And you deserve it.
Thanks.
Okay.
I still don't deserve a point for the London Underground question because that was you got the right date, spot on.
We'll have to look into Love Film as well because that was another complicated.
Yeah, that was a funny one. Yeah, yeah.
I double check these questions.
It's a misconception.
So this is a closest wins and kind of fits into the theme of today's discussion. How much did the International Space Station cost to build?
Ooh.
In US dollars.
Closest wins, did you say?
Closest wins. And I've got a very round number, so I'm guessing it's just an estimation.
I've read it earlier on today, and I'm trying to see the number in my head, and it was less than I thought it was going to be. And I've added a zero on or taken a zero away, but it was like 200 million?
Ugh.
I don't know if I've gone the wrong way with that.
That was what I was going to say too. So you might be right. 190.
Well, you're both very far away.
Oh, okay.
It was $150 billion I've got.
Wow.
One of the most expensive structures humanity's ever made.
Okay.
Good God.
All right. Way off then.
I don't know. Is that maybe the cost of maintaining it?
Maybe the cost of all the rockets to send up to assemble it. Maybe.
Well, I think a lot of the, what are they called, compartments were sent up on... space shuttle flights, and I think they cost billions just to fly per launch.
Right.
And apparently it costs $4 billion a year to just operate it.
God, right.
Really?
Yeah. So.
So it's probably like 2 billion that I actually read, rather than 200 million.
Yeah. Well, maybe it was 200 billion.
200 billion. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you were closer, so you get the point. Mm. Absolutely.
You do get the point. Yeah. Yeah. There's no limit to how far away you can be on a closest wins.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. But still, Jeff Bezos could still afford to build one himself.
He could.
Based on that estimation. And then have multiple billion dollars left over to muck about on it.
Oh, you know what? You know what? Now that we've mentioned sea life in a couple of questions and the space station, if I were a multi-billionaire, I would build my own underwater city.
Yeah, right? Stop. Yeah. Who cares about Mars? Build Atlantis.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Go the other way. I'd call it
Atlantis 2. And the Titanic dock. And the HMS Bismarck dock. All the portentous names.
You could build it near the Titanic ruins, and then you could just go out on expeditions to it. That could be a local tourist attraction.
I'd make Rapture from Bioshock.
Oh, that would be cool. Yeah.
Less of the crazies, but yeah.
Proving that we've learned nothing from that game.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, thank you both of you for joining me today and for engaging me in a wonderful discussion about billionaires and space. What did everyone at home think of this discussion? What do you think about the private space race that these billionaires are going for? Is it just a show of ego, or is it the future of space itself, the final frontier? Thanks everyone for watching, and make sure you go and check out Stu's channel over at Debunked. Are you working on anything you can tell us about, Stu?
From Robin's opening, what I learned this week, I'm doing a video on expressions that we use every day that are actually completely wrong.
Even
further wrong than the one you kind of came up with at the start. That they just mean either completely the opposite or scientifically wrong. Oh. So it's expressions that are completely wrong according to science.
That's interesting. I like that. Yeah. Oh, I can't wait to see that one.
Nice. Cool. Nice. Well, thanks to you for joining us today.
Thank you.
And thanks everyone for watching. And we'll see you next time.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye.